We finished up our Wednesday night in Genesis last week. Charles brought us a good message on Isaac and his wife, and reminded us at the end of it that Isaac was going to Egypt, and the Lord told him no, and he didn't. But that kind of brings us, we're going to skip from that point for about two generations. We're starting a new study tonight, and it's the first book of Exodus, if you want to follow along in the reading here in a few minutes. But we have skipped, and I don't know why the book skipped, Jacob and Joseph, and things that happened to them along the way. And I kind of hate that, because tonight where we're going to start is with the Hebrew children in Egypt. So I hope you all remember how they got there, how Joseph and all the misdealings that happened to him managed to become the number two man behind the Pharaoh. That's a pretty good way to go up in politics. Okay, the title of the study for tonight is A Long, Hard Oppression. As you can tell, we're going to start talking about the Israelite children being enslaved in Egypt. And like I said, the reading is from Exodus chapter 1, verse 7. And we're going to go back and talk about this children going to Egypt here in just a minute, but I want to go ahead and read this verse 7 first. The children of Israel were faithful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Like I said, the story about Joseph and the children going to the land of Egypt. The Pharaoh at the time that Joseph was there, and we got to realize that he was a slave at that time, was allowed to bring his family with him, and the Pharaoh actually ceded them property in Goshen, which was a very rich area in Egypt. And we realize now that they were multiplying, but not only were they multiplying, they were doing quite well economically. And I suspect that's where this term mighty comes from in this statement. We know that there was a lot of them. That makes them mighty to some extent, but their crops were good, their herds, their flocks were good. And I think what we see is God's blessing starting here as far as making the Israelite people a great nation, which is what they promised. God promised Abraham. And as we go through this, there's another line that kind of flows through this thing. And it's God's plan, which never changes, versus man's plan, which changes regularly. As we go through here, we're going to see God's plan, Pharaoh's plan, God's plan, Pharaoh's plan, all the way through this. Okay, I'm going into verse 8. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Boy, this is where the wheels come off of my wagon when I started going through this. I don't remember this from childhood church or all the way through. But we see here that there was a king that arose, which meant most likely that a Pharaoh before him has passed. If it had been a son that was taking the throne from a deceased Pharaoh, it would seem that they would know Joseph. Joseph was the number two man in Egypt. But we are told now that this Pharaoh that took the throne does not know Joseph. And in researching that, I found that there's really two theories about who this Pharaoh was. And I'll tell you up front, the name, we don't know. As you go through the Bible, you'll notice that the Bible refers to the kings as pharaohs. They never give the names. And I thought sure that somewhere out on the internet I'd find them, but I did not. But I want to stop here and go back and give a little bit of history of what's going on in Egypt right now. Most of Egypt is determined by dynasties, the dynasties of the pharaohs that go through, and it may be one pharaoh and his son, or just one pharaoh, whatever, but they're given in dynasties, and unfortunately they don't hook that back to time. So I couldn't tie some of the stuff I wanted to back in time. But at the end of the 13th dynasty, there were some people that started coming into Egypt from foreign lands. These people came through what the Romans later called and identified as Palestine. They were not Palestinians. They were only passing through, apparently. But these people apparently were from a foreign land in which they had been purged from. They came into Egypt. They were absorbed into Egypt. They were absorbed into their society, into their economics. And before long, they were on the throne. So maybe they had experience in being leaders. I don't know. But they ended up being pharaohs in Egypt. Now, these people's name, and this is the last name that they were given, I can't pronounce those first names, were Hyksos, H-Y-K-S-O-S. I always wondered about that S-O-S when you go through here. Now, they originally, that was not their original name, and originally they were known as foreign rulers. And I said, I can't pronounce the Egyptian words for foreign rulers, but they were foreign rulers. Now, the problem here is that Hyksos in Egyptian means shepherd kings. Here we go. They think they're more Hebrew children coming in. And so they're not too happy with that. In actuality, that was just, I think it was the Greeks made a misspelling and they picked up this word Hyksos, and that's what they become known as. Now, the reason I bring this up is our study guide, and it's quite a bit of material that I got off of the computer and read, thinks that the Pharaoh at this time was a Hyksos person, not an Egyptian, not a native Egyptian. And this would make sense. Again, a native Egyptian would have known Joseph. And I think that this is one of the reasons that it's one of these people that has come in, is that he did manage to become the Pharaoh. So we have a non-Egyptian at this particular time. Now, when just a little bit of trivia, I guess. When these people came into Egypt, they brought some military techniques and stuff with them. One of them was military techniques. And apparently it was much better than the Egyptians, and the Egyptians adopted their way of fighting. And the other thing, and this surprised me, they brought the chariot to Egypt. All my life, I thought the Egyptians invented chariots. They didn't. They were brought in by the high-cost people. If you got chariots, you got to have horses to pull them. The Egyptians didn't have horses. They had to introduce horses to them. Weaponry, they had updated weaponry. Instead of a longbow, they had what they called, the material here calls a compound bow. I don't think it's a compound bow as we know it today. I think what it was is a recurve bow. But in either way, it does have a lot more power that it can put into the arrow. And then they also introduced the bronze dagger to these people. So now we have the Egyptians, which should have been, in my way of thinking, probably a lot more militaristic. But as we go through here, they really didn't seem to be. Another little tidbit of information, Charles Place trivia with you, you might see. The High Coast people ruled for 108 years in Egypt. Now, some of this rule, Egypt's not ruled totally by a pharaoh. And during this time, it was actually split in half, partly ruled by native Egyptians and partly ruled by the High Coast people. And they did that with six kings. Now, I read where they had lost the names of the kings. They had no idea what they were. The next piece of documentation I pulled up had a nice list, five names on it. So maybe the first document was old. And I ran into that. There's real old documentation up there. It's been updated. And now, the reason those numbers don't agree, five and six, is because one of those men ruled with a pseudo name. He didn't use his real name in there. So he ruled twice. So it was actually only five men involved in that. Also in the documentation, I found there's two theories. One is that it was a High Coast Egyptian, or High Coast pharaoh at this time. The other one says, no, it was Egyptian at this time. And then they give reasons why they believe that. It's real odd because there's the same reason shows up on both charts in some cases. But anyway, I'm going to stay with it. It's a High Coast pharaoh because that's what our textbooks stays with. As we get into this a little bit later, you're going to see where they refer back to this. All right, now the next verse 9. And he said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. And this was the Pharaoh speaking. And you can see right now that he's probably beginning to get a little bit worried. And I can well see why he would if he was High Coast, because they were kicked out. The reason they got to Egypt, they were kicked out of their country, and he can see what's coming. They're going to go here. And actually they did, but it was quite a bit later. Well, let's go to verse 10. And this again is the Pharaoh speaking. Come on, let us deal wisely with them being the Hebrew children, lest they multiply and come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us. So get them up and out of the land. And if I was in the military, I'd slap the podium about now. Next statement, the last statement I want you to remember as we go through here. What he wants, he, the Pharaoh, wants is to get the Hyksos people up and out of the land. Now, why he did what he did, if he wants them up and out of the land, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, but... that's what he did. Going on to verse 11. Therefore, they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, that's also called storage cities, Pithom and Ramesses. And I always thought Pharaoh Ramesses built the city of Ramesses, but it says here the Hebrew children did under this Pharaoh, whoever he was. But what we see here is the beginning of the oppression of the Hebrew children. In other words, when they set taskmasters over them, they enslaved them. Not only did they enslave them, they took their belongings and their property in Goshen. So now they've gotten rid of the Hebrew children's financial assistance. But if they want them up and out of the country, why did they enslave them? Why didn't they just run them out? And apparently I think the answer to that is up above here where it says they're more in modern era than we are. I think that they were afraid of them, to be honest. And if they knew who they were dealing with, they probably should have been. Okay, now that's what I'll call plan one. The Pharaoh has set this plan into action. He's going to enslave the Hebrew children. He's going to set taskmasters over them, and the taskmasters were then to see that they did their work. But they also separated the Hebrews into work gangs. And they were small gangs. They did not want them together because they were afraid they would start talking to each other and rebel. So that was a good part of the reason for these work gangs. We also mentioned the two cities. Like I said, there's Ramesses and Pithom. They were called treasure cities first. As I got to looking at information I could get, I found out that they were also called storage cities, and this is most likely what they were storage cities. Now, it also says that they lost where these cities were located for some reason. Now, apparently the cities deteriorated and were, with the wind and the sand, were covered up in sand. And they said they were lost. Now, I think if I remember right, when the real Exodus come, they actually exited us out by these cities going to the Red Sea. In fact, in 1883, an archaeologist actually found Pithom, and they excavated Pithom. And when they did, what they found was a storage city, most likely for grain. Very heavy brick and very thick brick walls. Only doors into the rooms, nothing from the lower rooms to upper rooms, no way of getting between them. So we got to realize that the Israeli people built these big, thick walls in these cities. There was temples in the city and other stuff in the cities when they excavated them. As far as I know, I didn't find anything about excavating Ramesses. So it was supposedly very close to the other city. So it had to be. I'm sure by now it probably has been excavated, as much work as they're doing over there. Okay, verse 12. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they is plural, so I assume it's a Pharaoh and his people, they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And it's probably a divine implication here, and I think it is. Is God's plan is that he's going to make a great nation, and to do it, he's got to multiply. And whatever the Pharaoh does is not going to slow him down. But we find out here they are grieved, and we also find out the other thing is that they are continuing to multiply. In verse 13, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. Now, I call this plan two. His plan one didn't work in that he just enslaved them and put taskmasters over them. And it tells us that they're still multiplying. And it says here that they served with rigor. Now, looking up rigor, it's with a severe and harsh treatment. So what they're telling us here is plan one didn't work. They're beginning to work these Hebrew children a lot harder, probably a lot longer. And if they want them up and out of the land, I kind of wonder, are they trying to work them to death? It's been done before. And again, if they wanted them up and out, that sounds like they wanted to move them alive. But I'm beginning to wonder now if that was the Pharaoh's point at all. Now, I want to read, go on to 14, and I've got a little more there I want to add, but I want to read 14 first. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage of mortar and brick and all manner of service in the field. And their service wherein they were made them serve was with rigor. Again, like I said, the definition of rigor I got was strict and harsh. Like I said, I call this plan two. But there seems to be something else that happened right here. And looking into that, I found one piece of paper that may have explained what was happening. I told you about the high cost people that came into Egypt. And they came in at the end of the 13th dynasty. They were actually the 15th dynasty, if you want to be honest. But in 1570 BC, they were driven out of Egypt. And they were driven out because there was a person called Amos. There's a lot of AHs in this language. And it is believed that he was a very nationalist type individual. He thought that Egypt should be ruled by Egyptians. And he managed to make a big enough push on it that he actually got the Egyptians together enough that they ran the Hyksos people out of Egypt. And this was a military action. It wasn't, they just said go and they went. They actually ran them out. And I read somewhere that this Amos the first was actually killed in this action. Then later I heard that, you know, he made the Pharaoh later. So I'm not real sure whether he was or not. But it was a military action. We think that maybe that's what's happening right here. in chapters, or in verses 13 and 14, is that the hyklos are being run out. Now, that means that an Egyptian at this point would have assumed the throne. So now we have changed from the hyklos folks to the Egyptian folks. And we think that most likely that is the reason that the treatment of the Hebrew children got so much more harsh. It's because we now have an Egyptian as a king. Okay, I'm going to go on now. That really is where I call failure, plan two of the Pharaoh. I'm going to verse 15. And this is what I call plan three. Now, all of his first two plans have failed as far as getting the Hebrew people up and out of Egypt. But now he's getting a little more serious. It gets a little more interesting, too. The king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of one was Shepharo, and the other was Puah. There's that A-H again. Now, a little trivia type information. Sapphira means beauty. Puah means splendor. So, whatever that's worth, just thought I'd throw it in. But there's a couple of things I want to point out here is that the king is speaking to two midwives. Now, if the Hebrew people are multiplying at the rate that they seem to be multiplying as indicated, I got to believe that there was more than two midwives required. So I think what this really means is these were the two chief midwives, and they were most likely supposed to go give the command from the king to the rest of the midwives. The other thing there is, notice that the king calls these midwives in, which would strike you kind of odd that he would be talking to this lower level type people rather than putting out a public decree. And I believe the reason for that is that he didn't want the public to know what he was getting ready to do. Okay, now the king is speaking in verse 16. He said, when you do the office of midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stool, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, ye shall save. Then she shall save alive. Either I copied something wrong and that sentence is bad. Maybe both. But anyway, the daughters were to be saved. It was only the male children that was to be killed. And there is no description in here of what the king, how he told them to do it, but I'm sure the midwives would know. And I'm sure what he wanted was to tell the birthing mother that her child was stillborn. Okay, going on to verse 17. But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded, but saved the men children alive. So we see here these two midwives. Now I can imagine they probably went back, if there were more midwives, they probably went back and discussed this among themselves and what they should do. Maybe even prayed and asked God what he should do. But I think it's pretty clear that they feared God. And in fearing God, they were going to do what God wants them to do, which is to save the children. Because God's plan is to make this a great nation. And he's got to increase the population to do that. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. It's getting late. I'm going to skip. I had some comments there I was going to put in, just a tidbit of information. Now, when these midwives did not do as the king demanded, they must have known that there was going to be some reckoning coming. And sure enough, in verse 18, king calls the midwives in, and he said unto them, "Why have you done this thing and save the men, children, alive?" Okay, so now they have to answer up. And I think they probably had their answer when they walked in to talk to the king. And we're given their answer in verse 19. And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women." I'll stop right there a minute and add a comment. The Egyptian women were described as being spoiled and had to have a midwife from the time they started in their delivery until the baby was delivered. So it's really kind of a little slap in the face at the Egyptians. "For they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come to them." In other words, what it's saying is before we can get there, the babies come. So we couldn't kill the baby. It's already here. And you would think, well, maybe they're lying to him, and what's God going to do about them lying? But in fact, it most likely was a true statement. You got to remember, there's no 911 back in those days. There's no ambulances to carry him. That by the time someone reached the midwives to say, "We need your services," till the midwives got back to the woman, probably a long period of time. And there's a good chance that a lot of them were delivering themselves or with neighbors or whatever. But again, what I think we're seeing here is God's plan. Okay, we have seen now that these midwives gave the king an answer. And apparently, he must have believed them, because there's no record anywhere that he punished them. And that he being the king. In verse 20, though, we find that God is going to reward them. "Therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed mightily." So I think we can see the end of plan four right here. Plan four didn't work, at having the midwives kill the Egyptian male children. But the phrase in here, "God dealt with the midwives, dealt well with the midwives." And in verse 21, that is explained what he did. "And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses." Okay, anybody have any idea what these houses were? They probably already had shelter of some kind of houses, but God gave them houses. Nobody has an idea, and I didn't either when I read this. I had to go research it and find out what he meant. It was probably households, really, is what was talking about here, and the fact that he gave these midwives children. Back at this particular time, apparently midwives did not have children. But God gave, and he didn't say the two midwives, he said he gave them children. I have to assume any midwife that was involved in this, he allowed them to have children. So like I say, there's the end of plan four. And besides, now the midwives are having children. So I think the Pharaoh's just about struck out. But he's got a plan, one more plan. And it's not going to go well either. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, "Everyone that is born, ye shall cast in the river," and that's the river Nile, "and every daughter you shall save alive." Now, a couple of things here, a little bit of tidbit information on the river Nile. The Egyptians considered the river Nile a god. It was considered a god, treated as a god. And most likely the reason that he wanted his people, and notice that his people is going to do this job of doing away with these male children now. But by having them thrown into the river, that he thinks that it would cause the people to think they're doing the will of God, their God, the River Nile. But that plan didn't work very well either, because it didn't last very long. Now, verse 22 is the end of what I have to talk about. I want to add a little comment right here. Next week we're going to get into Moses, the birth of Moses. And I wonder if we look at this thing chronologically, if this edict or command from the Pharaoh was still in place when Moses was born, or whether we'll find that it's a different Pharaoh and maybe a different edict. But it almost appears that this edict just kept going right on into the birth of Moses. Now, on this one, I did look it up, and I think Moses was really born between now and the time Moses was born was long enough that it was not. It had to be a different edict. I'm going to read you a little paragraph that's in our textbook that we are teaching from. I thought was very applicable. It says, "The first chapter of Exodus reminds us that we should never grow too comfortable in this world. We're citizens of heaven, and this world is not our friend. Opposition and suffering are inevitable here. Our role is to be obedient to our Heavenly Father, regardless of the consequence. Only then can we have eternal impact on this temporary world we call home." Anyway, I thought that was pretty applicable on things that we've seen here, the Egyptians being enslaved, the midwives, what they were ordered to do, and time's up now, but I had another little item there about the midwives, and did they lie? And if so, how did God view that? But basically, what it would say is that if civil authorities told you to do something and it's wrong, then you shouldn't do it. Otherwise, do whatever civil authorities tell you to do. And that's found in Romans chapter 13, I think, somewhere in there. Okay, that's all I have for y'all. I hope I didn't bore you too bad.
I've always had the mental picture that maybe the midwives drug their feet getting there to allow the Hebrew women to have their children.
Well, of course they did, if they had to.
Before they got there.
Well, of course they did. They had to have a good story. Yeah, I have no doubt about that, Charles. I agree with that 100%.
It doesn't say.
It doesn't say. You won't find that. And you find all the way through this, you find little comments that make you think, well, they probably did this. And it's just like, I wasn't told, or nowhere in there did I find that there was more than two midwives. But when you look at how many children are being born, it almost had to be more than two. And I would guess in some cases, travel might be long for them to get there.
I saw in a whole National Geographic thing or something that I was watching once that the native Egyptians hated these Hyksos or Hyksos people that came in so much that when they finally ran them back out, they did their best to almost try to purge their history of them.
They did.
Which is why it makes it difficult for us to look back
That's the reason.
Try to find what Pharaoh was in charge at the time.
That is exactly right. In fact, what they did do, they were so angry, and a lot of it had to do with this Amos first. He was very angry. They went through even and took anything that even referred to the High Coast people. Hieroglyphics, they went through and chiseled them off. And as a result, you can't find out much about the people. But yes, they were so angry that they destroyed anything that could be referred back to them. And I was surprised I found that the 15th dynasty of Egypt was a High Coast dynasty. And where they come up with that, I have no idea. But there's a lot of things that makes you wonder as you read through about the archaeologists, I'll be honest. We're out of time, but one more thing I want to tell you. I didn't intend to, but since we brought this up. When they excavated that treasure city, there was three statues in front of it. One of them was Ramesses III, but the other two was two gods. As a result of that, archaeologists used that to date, thinking it's Ramesses built this. Actually, Ramesses was later, if you really want to be honest. But the truth is, when they finally got to digging into these statues, where they come from, it was either the 29th or the 30th dynasty in Egypt that moved those statues there from somewhere else. And the archaeologists had been using them to date. So there was big mistakes in the dates. Some of these dates, and I was trying to find a good hard date of when they started this oppression. And I've actually, the only place I found that was in the Schofield Bible. And they go through it and they give a date. And then right below that, the next comment is, some scholars believe this may have been 200 centuries off. You know, I'm not going to use that kind of information. So, and really what I want to do is put together a timeline, because I'll be honest, I thought the High Coast people had been kicked out of Egypt before the oppression. Therefore, it would have been an Egyptian king. But our textbook and a lot of other stuff that I had says otherwise. So I decided to stay with our text on that, because I don't have anything other than gut feel that they were out. I was trying to put together timelines. I did not trust the dates I had. And so I chose not to go that way. Charles, would you dismiss us? Unless you have something you want to add. And I appreciate everybody staying here and listening to me. I haven't done this in 50 years.
Dear Father, we just thank you so much for this opportunity to be here this evening, for the word that you've given to us. And we just thank you so much for the strength that we find, that even as we study of people that were oppressed, that you still multiply them, you still bless them, and how we can apply that to our own lives, the times that we feel oppressed, the times that we feel down, that we can recognize that you are a God who will never leave us nor forsake us, that you are with us and you will definitely bless us, no matter what the temporary perils and trials may be. We know what our eternal story is, Father. It's in you that we find our hope and our strength. So in the name of Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, that we ask this prayer with you to pray. Amen.
Thank you. Yeah, almost got you out on time.